This is A Sustainable Mind, episode 26.
We didn't do that because it was the environmentally responsible thing to do. We did that because it was economical and efficient and the way you live life.
Welcome to A Sustainable Mind, where we delve into the minds behind today's most impactful environmental campaigns, organizations, and startups. Inspiring the environmental changemakers of tomorrow. I'm your host, Marjorie Alexander. Today, we'll be speaking with Maya Van Rossum, lawyer by training, longtime and fierce environmental activist, and author of the book, The Green Amendment, Securing Our Right to a Healthy Environment. Maya, welcome to the show.
I'm excited and I'm really thrilled for the opportunity to talk to you about it. You're my first official on the day launch interview.
Excellent. Excellent. Yes, it is launching today. Oh my gosh. I totally forgot. I was looking at my schedule. I was like, oh, that's really exciting. But here we are. And you're right. It launched today. So anybody who's interested in grabbing the book, either an ebook or the physical book, can head on over to asustainablemind.com at the end of this interview to grab your copy. But we'll be diving into more about the book in a second. So I always like to start out with talking about how environmental sustainability played a factor in your childhood or in your young adult years. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Growing up, I think, you know, I was really reflecting on this question. I learned to live lightly on the earth from my parents. And it's not that we talked about environmental protection and we didn't talk about why you compost or why you use cloth bags. And remember, this was using cloth bags many decades ago. I'm 51 years old. Well before, you know, it was common practice, we would, if you had to pick something up from the shop, even though the shop was a half hour bike ride away, if you didn't need your car, you rode your bicycle. We didn't do that because it was the environmentally responsible thing to do. We did that because it was economical and efficient and the way you live life. So I guess growing up, we just did these things, but we did it because it was the right way to live. Not because it was the environmental way to live. So growing up, I never thought of it in those terms. We just did it. We lived lightly on the earth to the degree that we could.
And do you think that that was typical of your generation? Or was that something that your parents picked up from their childhood? They raised you to be that way. But I can't honestly say that I think most people in their 40s or 50s or 60s necessarily had that growing up. So where did that come from?
Yeah, definitely. It was not the way the other kids in the neighborhood or the other kids in my school district were raised. And in fact, you were the outside kid because you did things differently. You thought differently. You know, I don't really know why my parents were that way. Sometimes I've had people say, well, were your parents hippies? My parents were like the farthest thing from hippies. My father was a college professor. He was a scientist and he taught at Temple in Philadelphia. My mother had gone back to school to get her PhD in mathematics and went on to teach at college as well. And they were not, I mean, they were professors. First off, I do think that my parents were just socially justice minded. That's just when they saw an injustice, they spoke up. They didn't speak about it before the fact or after the fact. They spoke up in the moment and did what needed to do if somebody was being treated unfairly. I think in terms of environmentalism, both of my parents were European. My mom was Dutch. My father was British. They came here to the United States when I was a year and a half old. In Holland, you rode your bicycle. You used cloth bags. They both grew up during wartime and so didn't talk about it frequently, but I remember my mom talking about, you know, you would get one slab of butter and one egg a day and how cautious and thoughtful you had to be about using the resources that were available to you. It was all homemade bread, homemade jams, homemade brownies, homemade cookies. Everything was homemade. And I think it was just part of the way they were raised. And I think it was just part of who their families were, that they were socially justice minded. For me, it manifested itself in my life as a real love for nature. Mm-hmm. I think for them, it was just about doing what was right because it was right.
Yeah.
I don't really have a better way to explain it.
No, that's amazing and that's beautiful. And I wish that more parents were that way, not only for your generation, but also for the kids that are coming up today. I think that our society is so materials based and now so technology based. And not only the physical items that we purchase and how the manufacturing of those items, throwing those items away in an irresponsible way impacts the environment, but really just the mindset that that creates about, I just constantly want more stuff and not spending the time outside and not really connecting with place, learning about your environment, learning about where you're growing up and where you're living, and really paying attention to community, which I think is what I hope to do. But it's very challenging. It's challenging times. And there, I think, is a lot of pressure to take part in a very high level of consumerism. So definitely appreciate people like you being around to kind of steer the rest of us in the right direction.
So, you know, I have to share one of my favorite stories that I think really expresses how I grew up. First off, it was a lot of outdoor play. You know, television, there was no limit for an hour or not an hour. And when I was growing up, there weren't a gazillion television channels. But, you know, it really, you played outside. I played in a creek. I played in the forest. I played in nature. Just thinking about my parents and what you were talking about with consumerism, this really is one of my favorite stories and I think highlights who my mother was and how I learned to be who I was and get over inhibitions of people thinking that you were odd for the way you lived and somehow not caring if you were doing the right thing. So when I was growing up, you know, what people used to do is they would, this time of year, they would rake up their leaves and they put them in big, giant plastic trash bags and they would put their leaves out as trash. Mm-hmm. And so not only did the leaves get thrown out as trash, but all these plastic bags, right, that are fossil fuel made and that don't break down in nature were all just being thrown away, house after house after house. What my mom would do is she would, during this time of year, every chance she had, she would get into her VW Volkswagen and go around and collect those bags of leaves, bring them home and dump them in the local forest so they could be turned into compost. You know, often you got sideways glances and they were thrown out for trash. You know, if somebody was outside, you'd try to wave or say, hey, thanks, just taking your leaves. And you get sometimes some nasty looks and nasty remarks. As a child, you can imagine that was not my most fun thing to do. But my mom always gave me the opportunity to participate. And in time, I would go because she would be so happy when I joined her, right? I did it for my mother at first. But as we went through the experience of collecting these leaves and saving them from the trash and turning them into beautiful soil that was used in the garden, I really learned about sort of the natural cycle and learned that doing the right thing felt good no matter how other people reacted to you. So that was one of my earliest experiences. And again, we weren't doing it, as far as I knew, to protect nature or not protect nature. Again, we did it because it was ridiculous that people were throwing their leaves out with these big, giant black trash bags.
Right.
So we saved the leaves and we reused the trash bags in a variety of ways in our daily lives. So the bags got reused as well.
That's amazing. I mean, to have parents that are change makers in the community and for you just to be following in the footsteps is so amazing. Now I want to talk about the route that you took from that wonderful upbringing to your professional experience in environmental sustainability. So can you talk a bit about the Delaware Riverkeeper Network and how exactly, what led you to work for that organization?
So the Delaware Riverkeeper Network is a regional organization. We work throughout the four states of the Delaware River watershed, which includes New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware. And we work at the national level as well to the extent that's needed to protect our watershed. The way we protect the river is genuinely working throughout all those watershed states, because to protect a river, you have to protect every piece of the river's watershed. And we fight every day to champion the rights of the Delaware River and to all of its communities to be healthy, free-flowing, and abundant with what we say is a diversity of life. Not just have a lot of life, but have diversity life in it and healthy life in the river. We do advocacy, we do litigation, and we rely on good science and good grassroots activism to support that advocacy, litigation, and to make change. When I was in law school, I was studying environmental law because I wanted to be a better advocate, not necessarily to be an attorney. And I encountered a gentleman that was then the Hudson River Keeper. There was only one. And there was him, and there was the Delaware Riverkeeper Network just in its infancy. And I learned about being the voice of a river and what it meant to stand up no matter what for a river. And I recognized pretty quickly that that's what I wanted to do. When I was graduating law school, I refused to look at any jobs that were not, did not involve environmental protection. And that included, you know, I wasn't interested in agency work because often even environmental agencies go the wrong way. Long story short, very quickly after I got out of law school, I became the attorney at the law clinic that represented my organization in litigation. I did that for 2 years, and then I became the executive director of the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, and then shortly thereafter became the Delaware Riverkeeper. And all I can say is it was the path that I was meant to be on, and I ended up in the right place very early on in my life and my career, and I've been there ever since.
Awesome. Awesome. Something that I find a lot of listeners ask about is who are the right people to know to move forward in the realm of environmental sustainability? So who are the individuals that you've worked with over the years in this organization that you feel like have been critical to the success of the organization?
Everybody who's gotten active on any issue is critical to the organization and our success. You know, as the Delaware Riverkeeper, I'm charged with being the voice of the Delaware River, right? And being the lead advocate for the river. But protecting a river, protecting any natural resource is, of course, not the job of one person. It's the job of a community. And my community for the Delaware River is the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, which at this point includes 20 staff members. When I first began, there were maybe half a dozen of us. And then all of the members we have throughout the watershed, and all of the people who aren't members but have stepped up and written letters and testified at hearings when we've asked them to fight to give the Delaware River a voice and ensure a good outcome. So there are so many people that I have met along the way. If somebody was willing to stand up and contribute, then they were a change maker that I wanted and needed to know, because we had to do it as a community.
Awesome. Obviously, people can go to asustainablemind.com to get these links, but if they're local, they can obviously volunteer with you all. The Delaware Riverkeeper Network.org is where they would go for more information. But for the individuals that aren't in that area, how do people go about finding an organization to volunteer with or just to get involved with in some way, shape, or form?
So if they want to get involved in the movement that I'm hoping to inspire with the book, which is about constitutional protection for environmental rights, for there we have a website called forthegenerations.org. So that's a place on that front. But really looking for your local community organizations to get involved with, it really is as simple as a Google search. You know, whether you do it at your home or you go to the library, putting in the search words, environment, forest, river, creek, whatever natural resource, animal, you know, birds, whatever is the natural resource that you're attracted to, putting that in as your search term will turn up more, and your town, right? In your town or your state, you'll find more opportunities than you know what to do with. And then it really is just about reading and seeing, when you read about the organization and their work, which one appeals to you most? What are you most attracted to? Because the issue that you're most attracted to is the issue that you're going to be most effective in advocating for change on, because that's where your heart lies. And you really have to follow your heart in these things. We can't all fight for everything. There's just not time and space for that. But if we can each identify just one thing that we're really committed to and get involved to protect that one piece of nature or to fend off that one community threat, then we will have contributed amazing change that helps protect our world for the benefit of all of us. So don't try to overdo it. I mean, that's what I try. Don't try to do everything. Try to do the thing that you care most about and then just stay committed to it.
Oh my gosh, you are literally giving me goosebumps. You know, I think it's such a simple thing, but I was searching something on Google the other day, and there's a local organization here in Los Angeles that deals with food deserts, a topic that I feel very strongly about. And I'd heard of this organization. I had no idea that they were local. This is an issue that I've been following for years. I had no idea that they were out there. So it seems like a really simple thing, but I think people really miss out on opportunities without taking that, you know, 30 or 60 minutes to really dive deep into these issues that people feel very passionate about. And, you know, find an organization locally, one or two organizations to donate to or to volunteer with, or really just to attend one of their events and see what they're all about. Such an important issue.
Yeah. And not, and that is the other thing, is I think it is hard for people to know how to get started, just like you said. I mean, getting started is just finding the right organization or issue to hook up with, and then slowly immersing yourself in it. And don't feel like you have to be the expert on everything and you have to attend every meeting, and just feel like each week you're going to commit to do one thing, learn one piece of information, write one letter, make one phone call in response to an action alert you might see on that organization's website. If you just do one thing a week, you'll start to create the relationships and the knowledge that will really enrich your life and make you be able to get even more and more involved, right? And excited about, or you'll come to realize, you know what? This isn't the issue or the organization for me. And you'll figure that out. And then you'll move on and find the right fit. And that's okay too. Again, it's just about following your heart.
Excellent. Excellent. So obviously, the big news today is the release of your book, The Green Amendment, and we've touched a little bit on it so far, but I really want you to give us a large overview of what the book is about and maybe what you're hoping that people can take away from it.
So, you know, I think when people think about the environment, when they think about water and air and food and forests, they really believe in their hearts, understandably so, that they have a right to a healthy environment, that they have a right to expect that the glass of water they get out of the faucet is going to be free from toxins that will poison their body, and that they have the right to expect that when they take in a breath of air, they're not going to be drawing in dangerous contaminants that are going to give them an asthma attack or a heart attack or contribute to some illness within their body. But the fact of the matter is, while philosophically, morally, I agree that we all have a right to a healthy environment, under the law in the United States of America, that's not really true. We have a right to free speech, to freedom of the press. We have civil liberties. We have private property rights. We have gun rights. In some states, you have a constitutional right to gamble and get divorced. But for the most part across the nation, in the Constitution, where we list out the inalienable rights that we all hold dear and expect will be honored, we do not have the right to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment. Except you do have that right in Pennsylvania, and you do have that right in Montana. Everywhere else across the nation, in states across the nation, you don't have a genuine right to a healthy environment, and you certainly don't have that right under the federal law, at the federal constitution. We have a lot of environmental protection laws at the local, state, and federal level. But a recognition of the environment as a right, for the most part, no, except Pennsylvania and Montana. And so what my book, The Green Amendment, strives to do is to explain why we don't have the right to a healthy environment, how our environmental protection laws have helped us, but also at this point, how they are dramatically failing us, and how getting every state in the nation to pass an environmental rights amendment in the Bill of Rights in their Constitution, using the most appropriate language, how that will change the ability of us to truly protect our environment and our environmental rights, tries to explain how that, what that change means and what it looks like and how dramatic it is. And my hope is to inspire, through that knowledge, communities in every state in the nation to go forth and fight for a constitutional right to a healthy environment. And while we get those conversations going and we get that grassroots activism going and we get the recognition of the power and importance of constitutional level protection of our environmental rights, we'll quickly get a recognition that not only do we want those constitutional protections at the state level, but we want them in our federal constitution. And so the synergy and the energy and the passion and the recognition will build, and we will sooner rather than later, I hope, all come together and fight for and secure a federal constitutional provision in the Bill of Rights that recognizes and protects all of our rights to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment. And if we get there, when we start to see or continue to see, it's not start, when we continue to see our government officials, our legislators, our governors, our president undertaking actions, making decisions, advancing policies and programs and legislation that overstep and take from us our right to healthy air, healthy water, healthy soils, healthy foods, healthy forests, that we will immediately now be entitled to go to the courts and hold them accountable for violating our now constitutional right to a healthy environment. That's my goal.
That's absolutely amazing. I want to backtrack a little bit because you said that we do have this constitutional right in two states, one of which is Pennsylvania. And I'm thinking that that's due to the work that you were able to do that resulted in a certain court ruling in 2013. Tell us a little bit about that and what that means in terms of setting a precedent for other states moving forward.
In 1971, Pennsylvania put an environmental rights amendment in the Bill of Rights section of the Pennsylvania Constitution. And then very quickly, because some government officials sort of tried to overreach in how they used that provision to protect the environment, they actually ended up undermining it. And frankly, as one Supreme Court justice said, they disemboweled it. Mm-hmm. That was his word. Because there was this incredible overreach. And so the Pennsylvania Supreme Court very early on said that there was not truly a constitutional right to a healthy environment that was on par with the other rights listed in the Bill of Rights section of the Constitution, like the right to free speech, freedom of religion, all those other rights that we all know about and hold dear, that somehow the Environmental Rights Amendment that was in the same section of the Constitution wasn't deserving of the same legal recognition, that it was purely a policy statement, that it didn't have substantive force and effect, unless and to the degree that the Pennsylvania legislature passed laws to implement it. And that's the way things stood in Pennsylvania for over four decades, with the Environmental Rights Amendment essentially being ignored as a pure policy statement. Then the Pennsylvania legislature in 2012 passed an incredibly horrific piece of legislation in order to advance even further the drilling and fracking operations in order to extract gas from shale that was happening in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And they did a lot of bad things in this legislation, including mandating that every community allow drilling and fracking operations, a highly industrial practice, to happen in every part of their community, that they couldn't use zoning to limit these industrial operations to the industrial zones of the town, but they had to allow them in their environmentally protected areas, in their historic preservation areas, even in their residential communities, that you had to allow drilling and fracking industrial operations as close to 300 feet from people's homes. So we recognized that this was a moment in time when we had the potential to raise up the Environmental Rights Amendment and breathe life into it the way it was intended to have legal life. And so I, as the Delaware Riverkeeper, my organization, the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, teamed up with seven towns and a physician, Dr. Mahernish Khan, and we challenged this law that was called Act 13. The argument the Delaware Riverkeeper Network brought to the table was that this was a violation of the Environmental Rights Amendment, the Green Amendment that we had in Pennsylvania. And amazingly, the conservative Supreme Court justice of this conservative Supreme Court wrote a very powerful opinion that breathed life into Article 1, Section 27. The Environmental Rights Amendment that recognized, because this provision was in the Bill of Rights protecting people's rights to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment, that it was legally on par with those other rights like private property rights and free speech rights, and that it had to be honored, and that, in fact, Act 13 did overstep and did violate the environmental rights of the people of Pennsylvania. And suddenly, the world in Pennsylvania changed, and this long ignored Green Amendment now had legal, meaningful life. And it was really from there that I started to think about the power and importance of constitutional protection of environmental rights, look at what the situation was across the nation, and found that only Montana had something on par with Pennsylvania, that all the states had something. They might have had some language, but it didn't accomplish what we were accomplishing in Pennsylvania and Montana, and that many states had nothing. And that if we could change that, we really had the opportunity to change the world when it comes to environmental protection. So in Pennsylvania, we continue through our advocacy and through our litigation to define what it means to have an environmental right, because that takes time. You know, we've had over 200 years to define what it means to have religious freedoms and freedom of speech, and we're still litigating what that means. So it's going to take time, but we are working very hard to define what it means to truly means to have a right to a healthy environment in Pennsylvania, and building the precedent and building the strength of that environmental rights amendment in order to protect communities and the environment. And at the same time, I've been trying to go around to other states, to other communities, to share this story and try to inspire other activists to rise up and fight for their environmental rights in other states. Every time I speak with a community, I see how much this resonates with them, how they share in the vision of how powerful this could be. But it's, you know, community by community, and it's hard to build a movement that way when you're talking nationwide. And so that's where really the idea of a book and the importance of having a book became clear to me, and why I embarked on the effort of writing a book to really try to spread this message far and wide.
Well, thank you so much for really giving insight into that huge win and what it took to get there. And thank you for writing this amazing book. I want to take a quick detour here, because I think something that's important to remember is that when it comes to fighting for something, the movement is important, but people at the end of the day follow people. So, having said that, I like to take a quick, fun 5 minutes and ask you, as an individual person just living day to day, just you, Maya, being who you are in the world, and ask you a few, what I like to call the 7 sustainable questions. So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So,
let's hope I can do it.
So, can you share one long-standing habit that you believe has drastically improved your life? This can be environmentally related or something else.
Exercise every day, except Sunday. I start every day with an hour of exercise. And I really feel that it gives me a time, some time to decompress, to sort of let my mind wander, to get my body ready for the day to come. If you can't tell, I'm a high energy person and a high stress person. So I get all of that out, you know, first thing in the morning. And I just really find that it plays an important role in my life. And on those days where I don't have the opportunity to exercise for one reason or another, I feel like something's missing. So just really functional and practical. For me, exercise is a really important part of every day. And I really plan for it and I'm committed to it. And it's very rare that I miss my exercise time in the morning.
And is there a new habit that you're cultivating in your life right now that you'd be interested in sharing with us, that you're not too embarrassed to share with us?
Yeah. So here's there are two of them. One is an evening walk, because I find that email is overwhelming my life. And when I come home from work, wherever it is I've been for the day, the first thing I do is I open my computer and I get obsessive about email because I'm so overwhelmed by it. And it increases my stress. And then I email until it's so late, and then I eat and I go to sleep, you know? And I think that it's really not healthy. And it's having the effect of taking my time and attention away from my youngest child, who's 11 now. I have 2 children. They're 10 years apart. So my daughter is out at college. My son is home with me. And, you know, I'm stuck to my computer doing email and having all the frustrations that email brings when you get that negative message in. So I think it's taking time away from him. So part of it is to try to get in 20 minutes of walking. The other part of it is trying to return to a habit of having a family meal where I sit down with my son and my husband. Because when Vim, my son, was an infant, there was my daughter, 10 years older. And then my husband, he and I got together when my daughter was 8, he had 4 older children. At that time, they were young, ranging from 8 to 16. And we had a really nice family dinner every night. And so Vim experienced that when he was young. As the kids got older and moved away, and I got wrapped up in email and more work, and we all eat differently, family dinner went away. And Vim has suddenly been asking for that the last couple of months. So I'm trying to restore the concept of family dinner to my day so I can just sit with my son, look him in the eye and say, you know, how was school?
Right. So important to take that time with your family, which can be your biological family or your chosen family, to just take a second away from the technology. You're absolutely right. I was up till, I think, 4 a.m. this morning. So not necessarily the most ideal time for to take a walk before bed. But that's definitely a habit that I think I might try to incorporate into my life moving forward. So thank you for that. What is one item that you have acquired in the last 6 months? When I say acquired, I mean, you know, you got it for free. It was given to you by a friend, bartering, perhaps something that you just did not purchase that has had a positive impact on your life.
So that's easy. And here it is. It is a homemade satchel of lavender. You know, when I work with communities on these environmental protection issues, you know, you develop amazing relationships with people. And one of the battles I'm taking on with a community is really to fight to protect a community from a highly toxic site that exists next to their village neighborhood. It's actually one of the stories I talk about in the book. It's called Bishop Tube. Very difficult situation. Kate Stauffer, you know, one of the families I work with, she one day just gave me this little satchel of lavender. And it's so lovely and it smells so wonderful. So one, it's just, I put it in my computer bag now and sort of when I'm feeling like high stress or I need a moment or I'm about to speak at a meeting, you know, I just give it a sniff. But the most important thing it does for me is I hate to fly. As much as I fly, as much as I've flown my entire life, because I was fortunate to have a lot of European travel, I hate flying. It's so frightening to me. And so the first flight I took after Kate gave this to me just a couple months ago, I pulled it out of my computer bag. I put my headphones on and I just sat there sniffing my bag of lavender. I swear to you. And I like went off into this different realm, this like different protected universe of lavender and music. And it made my flight so much easier. And so like the next flight I took it out and I was chatting with the people around me, very nice people. And I suddenly realized like, this might look really odd. So I warned them all. I'm sniffing on lavender, not on anything else. Right. So now it's like also a talking point when I get on my flight. So it one calms me. It gives me a place to zone out, but it also becomes a nice like little talking point with the people around me, too, which is, you know, nice when you're about to have a long flight together. So it's a satchel of lavender from Kate Stauffer.
Awesome. If you had access to a time machine and you could go back and speak with your past self at any point, when would you visit and what would you tell yourself?
I would not go and I wouldn't tell myself anything. And the reason is I have had, just like everybody, you know, very, very difficult moments in my life. Growing up, some real sadnesses. You know, you talked about a family that you select. I have a family in my children and my husband that I adore. But as for other family members, my parents have passed, but other biological family members, I self-select to have a different family. You know, the people I work with at the office and in these issues. And all of that, these were all very difficult times making those decisions and all the experiences that led to it. But the truth is, I am who I am and I do what I do. And I had the opportunity to become the Delaware Riverkeeper and to write this book and to enjoy all the people I enjoy and to have my wonderful husband and have my 2 beautiful children and have, you know, a relationship with stepchildren. I mean, I just have all of this because I went through that life. And, you know, I would worry that if I went back and tried to short circuit any of it or make any of it easier, then I wouldn't have the personality I have and I wouldn't approach life the same way I do. And so I wouldn't be where I am now. And I wouldn't want to lose. I love my life. I love it. And even on those really hard days when something really sucky is going on, I really try to stop and remind myself that I love my life and I'm really grateful for it. So I wouldn't want to change a thing, because if I change something, I might not be here in this moment with you right now. And that would be really sad.
That would be really sad. I would be sad. Thank you for sharing that. Do you have, well, in addition to the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, do you have an online resource that you can share with our listeners? Something, again, related to social or environmental change, or something else that you just find useful in your daily life?
The one thing that I would offer to people listening is that forthegenerations.org website, because that really is about the first thing before the book, about spreading the good word and the vision of the importance of constitutional protection of environmental rights. Beyond that, you know, like there are just so many wonderful resources out there. You know, I love the internet. It's a great thing. But I really encourage people to go back and do a good read. And I know you have another question about a book. So I don't want to, but I will tell you, can I answer two questions in one, or should I hold
on? Sure, jump right into question number six. Why not?
Yeah. So the really amazing book, and actually when the publisher I worked with on my book said, you know, what's the one book you would want to be like? And I mentioned this book and they said, why? And I said, because I believe it instigated transformational change in the way I view the world and the way other people view the world. So that's the preface. It's a book called Last Child in the Woods.
Yes.
By Richard Louv.
Yes.
And it is such an amazing book about all the many powerful and important ways that contact with nature enrich children's lives, that even being able to look out of a window and see a tree increases the capacity for a child to learn, right? Oh, it's an amazing, amazing book. So that's really, it changed the way I thought about the world. And in speaking engagements all the time, I'm constantly referencing what I learned from that book. And I will say it was, you know, I thought, somebody said, you should try it. I sent Richard Louv an email with my book to just say, hey, any chance you'd read it and, you know, give a vote of confidence for it? And do you know what? He wrote back.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
He gave me a comment. And it's on the back of the book. And it was like, oh, my gosh, one of my heroes, right? And I just reached out. Just like I found an email on the internet. And so... So now not only is, you know, did he really help change the way I think about nature, you know, how powerful it is for people and children. And not only is he one of my heroes, but now he's like one of my favorite people, because he responded to me when I reached out through this mechanism of email, which I completely find to be the bane of my existence, but did this great thing for me by connecting me with Richard Louv.
That's awesome. Wow. That's, yeah. I mean... You know, getting in touch with these people who it's like, oh, my gosh, I look up to this person. It's like a 1 in 1,000 shot that they'll actually respond to me. And then you're completely blown over by the fact that they responded and they're so nice and like they're just everyday people, just like the rest of us. You know, I find that surprises people. And I've actually had that experience with listeners of the show. They're like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe that you're responding to emails while you're on vacation. I'm like, well, I mean, I love you guys. Like, you guys are the reason why I do this. Why would I not? Of course.
Yeah, no, it really is, isn't it? It's lovely. And again, it's like the double-edged sword. Like, email, you like me like you, on vacation. Oh, yeah. Got email, right? And like, that's what, on the other hand, it you know, it really does also allow this level of communication that is tremendously valuable and rewarding as well. So, double-edged sword.
Right. So final question. It's been a long journey, start to finish, obviously, and you explaining your journey is so motivating to me to get out there and find other organizations in my local vicinity here in Los Angeles to get involved with. I'm already involved with several, but I'm like so amped up right now. I'm like, oh my God, I got to go find organizations to volunteer with like this week. Which, by the way, I don't typically have that reaction while on an interview.
That's so nice of you to say. That's so nice. Thank you.
This is awesome. But if there's anyone out there that is starting a nonprofit or launching a campaign or writing a book, whatever it is, to kind of put this effort out into the world to connect with their passion and bring it to the masses and bring community together over a common goal. What are some of the fundamentals, the tools, the resources? And it doesn't have to be a whole bunch of stuff, but what did you put in place that ensured your success throughout your career that maybe you could give them as a piece of advice?
I think when you're embarking on any initiative, really the most important thing is to find that community that you can connect with. Because whether you're writing a book or you're engaged in grassroots activism or community organizing, it really is those relationships that will help you find that path. And so I always think about, well, how do you develop those relationships? You know, you can do all the internet searching and frankly, all the emailing you want, but to really bring together that collective and develop those personal relationships you need to advance is not something you can do through a machine. Not easily anyway. It's not impossible. But what I really encourage people to do is just to speak up and speak out, even if they're afraid to do so. So if there's an issue they're trying to organize a community on, go to a community meeting. And if there's a comment period, if you can get yourself up to that podium to just say 30 seconds of, I'm opposed to this or I'm for this. One, your opinion matters. You know, you don't have to have all the research and the science. If you're really for something or against something, your opinion matters as a member of that community. So finding it in yourself to go up to the podium and say something. Or if you can't do that, finding the ability to follow up with the person who did go to the podium after the meeting and shake their hand and thank them for what they said and then try to develop a relationship. Do a Facebook post or write a letter to the editor. Because what I think is when we put our positive energy out into the world to try to accomplish change, it's amazing how many people come out that have the same opinion, that are so appreciative that you spoke up and spoke out or took that step. And you can really start to build the relationships that will get you on that path. So I am thinking primarily, of course, right now of activism and grassroots organizing, but even something like, you know, doing a book, if you have a book project or you want to do a writing project, starting to find places and spaces to go where you can hear good information or share your perspectives will give you the opportunity to connect with people and then to, you know, sort of figure out your path. So it's always an easier question to answer, right? If you have like a specific something,
right.
But I think really generally it, as much as people like to, you know, get behind their machines and tap away or go into their little phones and, you know, hide. The truth is we really accomplish the best things when we work in community with one another. So finding those ways that you can access and develop a community that will support you and that you can support and be a part of, I think is just so important no matter what it is you're trying to accomplish.
Thank you so much, Maya. You have shared some really amazing, actionable advice on this show so far, and I'm absolutely blown away. I'm going to be listening to this episode as a listener and just like, okay, how can I make an even bigger difference in my community? So inspiring. So thank you so much for that. Just to give people a quick reminder as to some of the topics that we've talked about, Maya is the Delaware Riverkeeper, and you can contact them at the DelawareRiverkeeperNetwork.org. And also, please, please, please do check out her book, The Green Amendment, which you can find a link at the website, asustainablemind.com. I'll have a link in the show notes page for this episode. And finally, ForTheGenerations.org, which is where Maya is kind of starting this movement and getting this community together. So if you're feeling called to get involved, please do visit forthegenerations.org. And like I said, all of these links will be in the show notes page for this episode. So Maya, do you have any parting pieces of guidance? I know that you've touched on a lot and given us a lot of advice here, but any final words that you want to share with our audience?
So one, I really, really appreciate being here. It's been so nice and so much fun. And I appreciate your kind words. You know, that you heard my message and it resonated. That means a lot to me. It really does. And I guess that's my only parting word, I think, is it can be so easy for us to get wrapped up into our own lives no matter what we're doing, especially when we get involved with environmental activism or social justice movements. And for me, I think it's just always really important to remember, this is for me and my work, for me to always remember it's not about me. It really is about the earth. And I have to make sure that everything I do and everything I say and every connection I make and every strategic decision I make and every step I take is not because it's going to benefit me or make me feel good or me feel better. It's because it's going to deliver the message of the river or the earth or some community in need. And so I just really like to check myself a lot and make sure that it's always about the earth and others and it's not about me. And I think that that's a really good way to stay grounded. And to make sure that you're always making the right decision because you know that you're making it to benefit someone or something else. And I, for me, that helps me in my life.
Thank you for listening to A Sustainable Mind. This week, I want to give a big personal shout out to our latest patrons, Caitlin from Colorado, Sean from Utah, Susan and Rachel from Seattle, Washington, and Melanie from Los Angeles, California. Your contribution helps us spread the message about everyday people changing their communities and our planet for the better. Are you interested in helping A Sustainable Mind spread the message even further? Find out how you can become a patron at patreon.com/asustainablemind.